Are you going Bob McCowan style on YouTube today?
Yeah, I am.
Elliot Friedman, marijuana is legal in Canada. Does this affect your life?
Not yet, but I get the sense that's coming.
Explain.
I'm a person who's been wondering for a couple of years now about the healing properties of it in terms of, you know, hips, knees, stuff as I get older, things like that. How will that help me? I'm not going to get into it a ton, but as you know, autism is a cause close to my heart. And I'm wondering, as our family gets older, how much or if that's going to be a factor in that as well. I think those would be the right answers to your question. Now, as someone who started using it when he was about 3 years old, how does it affect you?
It doesn't really, because I've been wide open about, you know, the old podcast Greg and I used to talk about burning all the time. I just,
wait a second, you used to do a podcast before?
Yeah,
this?
There's a tiny little MVSW thing before we got together on 31 here. I think it's a day for sanity. I think it's been a long time coming. The way that it affects me is now, hopefully that we can have adult conversations about marijuana that, you know, exist, you know, past the marijuana is bad, alcohol is good, stay away from the demon weed. Like, to me, much like we had the steroid conversation a few weeks ago, which thankfully is more than, oh, steroids equals cheating, and let's just end the conversation there. There's so many more layers to it. At least now, I think we're starting to have the beginnings of a conversation. We'll talk to Riley Cote about this a little bit later on here on the podcast. We can now have a more informed and intelligent discussion about the various properties that are associated with marijuana.
I look at it this way.
And I'll be able to buy it at a store now.
I look at it this way. Sports, pro sports, especially the big contact ones, football, hockey, MMA, wrestling, boxing, they have big problems with painkillers. Big problems with painkillers.
Big time.
And if this is a step towards, well, we're going to be honest about the healing properties of marijuana instead of painkillers, I'm all for that. I'm all for that in sports. I'm all for that in society. The one thing I don't like about all this, you know, I was never a huge, like, I don't like taking even aspirin. Mm-hmm. I try to avoid taking any medication if I can. I've always liked being in control of my mind. I've never not liked being in control of my thinking process.
Being out of control of your thinking process?
Yes, out of control of my thinking process. So I've never really been a huge user.
You don't think there's an expanded vision you can glean from a different type of consciousness?
I will concede that some people have that argument, and that's fine. Everybody's brain works differently. But I don't like not being in control of what I'm thinking. The one thing about the whole thing that's bothered me is that in the rush to get it made legal, and I agree, I think there's a lot of things that make sense with it being that way, a lot of the concerns have been ignored. Like, we all know somebody, Jeff, who couldn't get their life going straight again after they got hooked on marijuana. For all the people it's done good to, it's also done some harm to people who use it the wrong way or use it too much. And I think that has been swept under the rug way too much. But I generally think it's a positive thing. And the one thing that Riley Cote talks about in our interview is that it is about time that we took an honest look at how it can replace things like opioids or painkillers in terms of treating people as in an aging society as we all get older.
The one thing that gives me trouble with it, and this is being very much sold as something that can help, listen, CBD oil can help, you know, inflammation, can help, you know, treat anxiety, and I'm all aboard on that one. I've always had a hard time with the idea, because it hasn't worked for me, this idea of sleep. Now, I think we've all had most of us listening right now, maybe I shouldn't say most, some of us who've had this experience, you can fall asleep getting high. It does help falling asleep. And I pause on that and
I
say,
do you sleep well though?
Here's my point. It's not sleep.
Yeah.
I don't believe that it's sleep.
It's like a passed out from alcohol sleep.
Correct.
Yes.
Now, over the summer, are you familiar with Matthew Walker? Dr. Matthew Walker? He's a Harvard sleep doctor. Wrote a book called Why We Sleep. Fascinating guy. And one of the points that he makes, and now, by the way, after reading that book, I am terrified, Elliot, of not getting 8 hours at least. So
yes.
Now I have,
I know who you're talking. Yes.
I have
okay.
like a non-negotiable 8 hour rule in my life right. because I'm terrified whether it's, you know, healing, whether it's testosterone production, but like all of it, like every single level, I am terrified not to get the proper amount of sleep. But one of the points that he brings up is the difference between falling asleep and losing consciousness. You can do things to lose consciousness and give yourself the impression that you are sleeping, but it's not a deep sleep. You can just, you know, smoke a bowl and go to bed and I'm out. I mean, you can do that, but that's not really sleep. So I always sort of pull up and pause when I hear people talk about, you know, how this can help them sleep and have a good night's sleep, because I've woken up plenty of times and said, yeah, I may have gotten 7-8 hours, but I'm not feeling refreshed in the morning, as opposed to, you know, doing like a stretching routine, a meditation routine, put the screen down and prepare yourself for proper sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the one place where I'll say this whole conversation comes up a little bit short and rings a little bit hollow for me.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just think that in the wave to get this done in Canada, a lot of things have been ignored that should not be ignored. In the overall place of things, I agree that this is something that is a good thing,
mm-hmm.
but there's been a lot sort of, let's move that off on the side so we don't really have to discuss that.
Yeah.
In the process.
One of the issues, or one of the questions that I'm curious about, and I got an answer today from someone in the NHL, is now that it's legal in Canada, let's say one of the goaltenders in Canada, pick them, decides to paint a...
Mike Smith.
There you go. Mike Smith, Calgary Flames, paints a pot leaf on his mask.
I don't think that's going to be allowed to happen.
Well, according to this person I talked to in the NHL, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Send a text, I don't think it would be approved for use is what comes back. And I kind of said, oh, what goes into that decision? Mask approval, that process is joint between the NHL and the Players Association. I asked if it is because, you know, legally, you know, not all jurisdictions have legalized marijuana, and came back, that would be one of the relevant considerations. But the fact that it is legal or not, according to the NHL, it is still considered a drug of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't allow its use to be promoted on their ice. Clubs are still not permitted to take legal advertising in this space.
You know, I think that's fair. You know, like if you remember a few years ago, wasn't Frank Nitti taking off Arturnito Mäki's goaltending mask because he's a hit
was
man?
Was it taken off, though? Because I remember it wasn't...
No. The one was taken off was Tyson.
Mike Tyson,
yes,
Ray Emery.
That's right. That one was taken off.
But then Nitti was on Nitamaki's,
no,
and it was like, hold on a second here. Hitman,
which
actually killed people.
No problem with that. But it was Tyson that was removed from Ray Emery's mask. The NHL is an interesting place because they test for marijuana, but they don't punish for it.
Right.
So they're basically saying, we get it. And I think that's the right way. You know, one of the things that was interesting about the commissioner is when they were adding cocaine to the list with the Players Association, someone there told me they were expecting like a real fight over that, mm-hmm. and they didn't want it to be, you get like Borja Salmi, you get caught you're suspended. And they were pleasantly surprised that the commissioner decided not to go down that route. He said, no, I'm talking about treatment and help first before we talk about anything punitive. And I guess the commissioner's wife has a history in that field,
mm-hmm.
so a lot of his thinking is shaped by that.
Like as a counselor?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what it is, but she certainly has an understanding of the entire situation. So they said he came at it from more of a position of let's get help as opposed to let's worry about punishing.
That's good.
So
that's
it is
great.
Good.
That's
that
great.
Is good. So I guess that it's the same way with marijuana. But, you know, I got to tell you, Jeff, like McDavid coming out the other day and basically saying, mentioning the word CBD and people are talking about it, that says to me that the cat is out of the bag anyway. That if we did an honest blind survey of NHLers,
mm-hmm.
and said how many of you are either using marijuana or the products for either, whether it's hemp or CBD or anything like that, what would you say the percentage is? 70?
Feels a little bit high to me. 70?
Okay.
Between 50 and 60.
Okay, but...
I don't know. I'm throwing darts on that one.
But I just think now that...
Like using versus, okay, every now and then
like
on the weekend, I'll have a smoke. I don't know. What do you consider you as a consistent user for pain relief?
That's what I'm talking about. Because
or just a casual,
these,
hey, the guys are having a barbecue and I'm going to go behind the garage and smoke a joint.
I'm not talking about that. Because as you know, so many of these guys are into the sports science now.
Mm-hmm.
They're into fitness, sports science. The teams are into sports science. Guys are going away for the summer. I mean, we all know now, 30, 40 years ago, you go away for the summer.
Go fishing, drink beer.
You come back fat and use the training camp to get in shape. Now, if you're not in shape for training camp, you're in the doghouse and you're behind.
Yeah, Tim Hunter, I was told, wrecked it for everyone. He was the first guy to show up in like whippy blue strength.
So how can you tell me these guys aren't hiring all these expensive trainers and elite cutting edge people and companies to run their lives and do their bodies head to toe?
Yeah.
And they don't know the benefits for healing. I find that very hard to believe.
If you took that exact same survey that you're talking about vis-a-vis hockey players and marijuana use, and you turned that same survey over to all the media members around the NHL, what do you think the percentage would be?
Probably lower.
You think lower?
Yeah, because I think alcohol is more...
Alcohol is a biggie.
I don't like to speak for anyone else. You know, for myself, you finish a broadcast, you go have a beer or two.
Yeah.
You know, we go out for dinner on the road and we have some wine or a beer or two. I've always believed among media, it's more alcohol than anything else.
It's more social get-together.
It's more, let's get together.
Marijuana is, looking inwards and it's a lonely ass.
And also you travel, right? So you're not carrying that stuff over the border with you.
That's fair.
But if you're going to tell me that the number's higher than I think, that wouldn't surprise me.
No bad marijuana puns. We've heard enough of those in radio and television, so we won't end this segment with one of them. Other than to say, this is 31 Thoughts, the podcast, brought to you by the all-new 2018 GMC Sierra Denali.
Drysdale led the team and 12 goals on the road. McDavid circles the net right out in front. Lucic scores. Pass for McDavid. Here is McDavid speeding in. Connor McDavid scores. His first goal of the season is the first goal of this game.
McDavid hits Nurse. A shot deflected. Nugent-Hopkins scores. And this game is tied. Connor McDavid has given Edmonton its first lead, 2-1.
Look at Connor McDavid. That quick cutback, I'm telling you, that is something special.
Power play goal, Connor McDavid. It's his third of the season, and he has now factored in 10 consecutive Edmonton goals. The Oilers right back in the game, 2-1.
McDavid moving in with Nugent Hopkins and Ratty. McDavid trying to get the shot away. Ratty does. He scores. Ty Ratty.
Rebound McDavid. He scores. And Edmonton has cut it to 4-3. Nugent Hopkins hits the post. McDavid buries it on the rebound. And we've got a hockey game with still 17:32 to play.
Now to McDavid. Cross legs. Nugent Hopkins. Out in front. He scores.
The record wasn't overly important to you. Why do you feel that way?
Whatever. It's not like a crazy record or anything like that. I mean, it's a little bit different. It's interesting, but it's not a big deal.
Okay, we'll get to Connor McDavid in a second, but first, I think in everyone's life in this media industry, there are people that help you along the way. I'm sure you remember very fondly people that helped you get your start, supported you along the way, put you in positions that assisted you into getting where you're at now. For me, I have plenty, whether it's Bob Mackowitz Sr., whether it's Nelson Melman, but maybe the biggest for my career personally, is that I'm not going to be my boss anymore. And that's the first time I'll say that going back to when I was at CBC in 2007, and that's Scott Moore,
mm-hmm.
who took me to CBC in 2007. I was doing local radio in Toronto, gave me a job, Hockey Night in Canada radio on Sirius, some ringside on Hockey Night and Beijing Games, and that grew into something bigger. And then when he went to Sportsnet, he brought me along as well. I owe so much of my career to Scott Moore that it's going to be weird not seeing him in the hallway and saying, hey, boss, anymore.
You know, he was a big fan of this podcast. He was one of the reasons it got started. He was a believer behind it. He thought it could work. And it doesn't exist without his willingness to push it and try to find the sponsorship for it. And when Scott got hired at, he does not remember this, but when I turned 18 years old, it was 1988, and I wanted to get into sports. And I had a friend who knew somebody at TSN, and she said, I spoke to my boss, why don't you come in for a day or two, and maybe you can get a job cutting highlights here. So I just turned 18. Mm-hmm. And I went in, and he was the producer at TSN. He was producing SportsCenter that night. And I wasn't very smart about it. And a couple, I was a loudmouth little kid. Actually, the funniest thing is I was a pretty shy kid, but I would guess I was trying to prove what I knew, and I opened my mouth when I shouldn't. And he called me a few days later, and he said, you're not ready for this. You're not mature enough for this yet. Mm-hmm. Go to university and learn. I've told him that. He has no recollection of that story. But anyway,
trying to get rid of you.
So that's true. So I'm in my 30s. I'm at CBC. I hadn't worked with Scott to this point. Then he got hired to run CBC Sports. And somebody actually warned me and said that he is not a fan of yours. He doesn't like your work. So I said, okay. And, you know, you just do your job. And I've never asked him if that was true, but I have reason to suspect it may have been. But I think as we got to know each other, you know, we got along really well. You know, the one thing I'm always appreciative of is the day that Hockey Night in Canada lost by CBC and went over to Rogers. You know, you're all thinking there, okay, now what's my next move? It was in November, if I remember correctly, and my contract was up the next September. So I knew the next 10 months I had to figure out, okay, what's my next job going to be? And I remember he called me that day and he said, look, you're not going to hear from me for a while. I have some other things I have to take care of, but we're going to hire you. You're not going to be a host. I want you to know that right now. You're not going to be one of the hosts of Hockey Night in Canada or Hockey on Sportsnet, but you are going to be a part of this team. And I knew that I could put away whatever concerns I had for a while, and it was going to sort itself out, and it eventually did. So I'm always appreciative of that. And, you know, hey, if you like this podcast, Scott was a big backer of it.
I had a similar one when I was leaving CBC, and you know, I was either going to re-sign with CBC, TSN, Sportsnet. I remember the negotiations dragged on a little bit. I remember Scott, I was out walking my dog, and I got a phone call, and it's Scott Moore. I was negotiating with Scott Woodgate mainly, and Scott calls, big guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I understand you haven't signed yet. It's like, you know, I'm still, I'm hemming and hawing back and forth every day. My mood changes. And he said, do you trust me? And I said, yeah, why would I not trust you? You were great to me, bringing me into CBC, and you delivered on everything you promised. He says, well, if you trust me, then end it now. Said, I'm not making you an offer right now. I just want you to end it now and, you know, call both sides and say you're going to Sportsnet. And I was like, the minute I do that, all of a sudden I have no leverage anymore in any negotiation. And I kept coming back to you, do you trust me? And I said, yeah. And once again, put all my faith and trust in Scott. And I remember calling him back and I said, okay, I called both sides and said, I'm going to Sportsnet. He goes, now we got you right where we want you.
I was wondering if the end of the story was going to be exactly like that.
No, but you know what? He's delivered on everything he promised.
Yeah.
Every single thing. Like I've always said, I'm a Scott Moore guy, and it's going to be tough not seeing Scott around the building anymore. He's meant so much to my career, and it sounds like he's meant a ton to your career as well. So let's start the show now.
Todd, speaking of Connor, through your years in Detroit, you had some Hockey Hall of Fame players that you coached and some great players as well in San Jose. Can you discuss just Connor's almost unwillingness to want to talk about himself because he's such a team guy? And are those qualities you've seen in a lot of the great players?
I think you see that in a lot of great players. They put their team, their city ahead of themselves personally. You know, I wouldn't call Connor shy. He's been around the media and in the limelight for many years, but he's not one to try and stick out like a sore thumb. He does his thing. He plays for his teammates, his team, his city. He has a tendency to put all of those before himself. And that's why we think he's a tremendous leader for our team. Connor's chosen his way, and we respect him for that. And like I said, he's teammates, team, and city before himself.
Connor McDavid, all the goals. Connor McDavid, all the assists. And as you write about in 31 Thoughts this week at Sportsnet.ca, Connor McDavid, all of the ice time, Elliot.
You know, it's funny. I was sitting there, and I was actually watching their game.
Is this the Winnipeg game?
No, this is before. I was watching. So they lose to New Jersey and Sweden to open the season.
Yep.
Then they lose to Boston. And whenever he's not on the ice, they are just getting tuned. And then I'm watching on Saturday when they play the Rangers in the afternoon, their first win. And someone says to me, he looks exhausted already out there. Like, they are asking him to do everything, and he's doing it, but he looks whipped.
Mm-hmm.
So I just started looking at the ice time, and, you know, he actually played less last night ice time than he did in the other three games. He was 23 and a half, 23 and a quarter. He was 24 against the Rangers, and he was 22-something against Winnipeg. But what really stands out is that his even strength ice time. He's over 19 minutes this year. He's had two 20-minute games, and he's over 19 minutes overall, and he played over 20 against Winnipeg on Tuesday night. Now, there's another guy who's over 19 minutes this year at even strength. That's Patrick Kane, but that's mainly on the strength of the one game against St. Louis,
right,
when he put up a big number. I think he was like 25 against St. Louis. I don't know if that's going to stay for Kane. But anyway, 19 even strength minutes for a forward. Last year, the leader was Getzlaf, 17:33, and he missed 26 games. He only played 56 games. McDavid was 3 seconds behind him. Getzlaf over McDavid by 3 seconds. I think that would happen if they had a real race, too. But now, so he's gone from 17:33 last year. Now he's already at like 19:24. And if you go back, the NHL started keeping officially ice time in the late 90s. Only once has a forward ever averaged over 19 minutes even strength in a year, and that's Pavel Bure. He did it in 1912 and 2000-2001.
Not Alex Kovalev.
No, not Kovalev. Kovalchuk is the only one this decade to average 24 minutes overall.
I would have thought Kovalev's ice time, just knowing like how long, like maybe shift length was the longest of anybody.
You know, I would check that. That's actually a really good point. So if you're looking at Edmonton this year and you're looking at the way they are with McDavid on the ice and the way off the ice, and you know how big a season this is in Edmonton, like so much is on the line. The first group of luxury suites, they're up. The 3-year leases are up. You have to have a good season.
Hang on. Jobs are on the line.
Well, that comes with it. Jobs are on the line for sure. You know that if you're Todd McClellan, you're looking at your bench, how do you not call his name?
Nonstop.
Every other shift.
Nonstop. Everyone's
97.
Yeah.
And what's he going to do? Say no? No, he wants the challenge. He wants to put the team on his back. So I'm curious to see how are they going to avoid not having a record-setting season for him this year in terms of ice time.
Two things here. One, have to get to the playoffs. Two, what do you have left when you get to the playoffs?
Yeah.
When everything gets tighter, when the games mean more, and there's that 7-game series. And it's that same guy who's coming at you like a battering ram. That would be one of the questions. I guess you can't worry about that when you're just involved in, you know, trying to save everything right
We're
now.
We're in game five.
I know. The Saturday game against the Rangers.
Was almost a must win.
It's game three. And they have to beat the Rangers. I'm like, oh my God, we're in game three and they have to beat. What do you mean they have to? Now, their schedule is, you know, crushing. Tuesday was Winnipeg. Thursday's Boston, then Nashville, Pittsburgh, Washington, and
Nashville's
then Nashville.
Canada, yeah.
Then you go, I think the next two are Chicago and Minnesota, so it eases up a little bit. But this is a murderer's row of games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as much as you look at, see, your thoughts on Connor McDavid and his ice time, I look at this stretch, and I said to myself, man, this is going to be tough on Klefbom, on Larson, on Nurse. I'm thinking
Nurse played 27 minutes.
Well, I'm looking like this is going to be awful. Chris Russell, this is going to be tough on those defensemen. And I didn't really consider how tough this is going to be on Connor McDavid for that ice time.
And, none of those are easy minutes.
No.
Like, there's no relaxed. Like, defensemen, like Ryan Suter, I always ask him about how much he played because he would play a ton. And he said that there you can sometimes find 20 seconds where you can coast on a shift.
Yeah.
Maybe not 20, but some. You can find a few seconds where you can coast. Like, there's no coasting for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting the best matchup every night. And he's got a speed as his weapon. Again, the power play goal last night, he blew past the Winnipeg defense, scores. I mean, if they don't make the playoffs, we're going to have the same debate again this year. Can a guy out of the playoffs win the MVP?
There is, again, nothing in the definition.
I get all that. I'll tell you this. I really wrestled with it last year. And if he's in on 90% of their goals like he is right now, like, I mean, he's always put that franchise on his shoulders. What's higher than putting the franchise on your shoulders? Lifting it over your head?
Gorilla pressing it.
Gorilla pressing it 12 times?
Yeah, I know.
It's 4-1 in the second. They're out of the game. They're out of the game.
And then McDavid.
And they've got their home opener on Thursday, and you know that's going to be nasty. Like, you're sitting there thinking, if you're one of the Oilers in the organization, like, we're losing 4-1 tonight. Our fans are going to kill us on Thursday.
Might be the only home opener where they don't do introductions of everybody.
Like, you're sitting...
Stop if they lose that game against Winnipeg.
And then he just puts the team on his back. He gorilla presses them. That's what we'll say. He gorilla presses them. And now everyone's going to go into that building on Thursday night. They're going to be like... I can't wait to see what he does next. They're going to be so wired up and so excited. So
I was on the...
That is an MVP.
I was on the Winged Wheel podcast a few weeks ago, okay?
Yep.
The Detroit Red Wings podcast.
Yep.
And we were talking about All-Star Game. Somehow we got involved talking about All-Star Game. And one of the things that I would love to see, I think we may have briefly talked about this last year on the podcast. I would just use Connor McDavid as a touchstone. Now, of course, Connor McDavid is going to be in San Jose at the All-Star Game. But a lot of players... who might be the fastest players in the NHL, might not be at the All-Star game. I love the idea of Connor McDavid taking on all challengers
in the
race. So whether it's Dylan Larkin, Andreas Athanasiou, Jordan Kyrou, like whomever. Bring the specialist.
Absolutely.
Dano Chara's shot versus everybody else's shot.
Yeah.
The guys that can hammer it. Bring those guys on. So they might not be in the All-Star game. They might have voted in as All-Stars or had the magic wand waved over them for All-Stars. But just to see Connor McDavid take on someone who has an individual skill that is comparable, whether it's Nick Ehlers, comparable skill set to Connor McDavid with the feet, give me that race.
I have written about this and asked for this for years now. Like, one of the things I really liked about was when Dylan Larkin won a couple years ago, yep. They said, okay, now we're giving you a chance to chase Mike Gartner. Because
yeah.
Gartner had the records. They said, here's the record, the all-time record, and they gave Larkin the chance. And Larkin beat it, and Gartner said, wait a second, you've got a running start. But like, I like that. Like, you could do it like WWE style.
Totally. Who's coming up behind the curtain?
Who's coming up? Who's this fast skater coming up behind the curtain? Like, Shea Weber, for example, this year probably won't be an all-star because he's not going to play.
Let him shoot.
Bring him out there. Bring him into San Jose. And they're changing it this year. They're doing Friday night, Saturday
yeah.
night. So bring him out on Friday night.
We need 10 slap shots.
And then what you do is, Shay, pick your favorite song. All of a sudden, the building goes dark. The song comes on. You bring up the screen. You show his past highlights. And he comes out under a spotlight to take on Zdeno Chara.
Or bring out old gunslingers, right?
Well,
Brian Rolston for slap shots.
Well, I suggested Iafrady.
Oh, yeah. The record, of
yes.
course.
And I asked him last year, would you do it? And he said, yeah, I'd probably lose because I used a wooden stick, but I would love to do it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Like, actually, now that you've talked about this, because Chara and Weber probably won't be All-Stars this year, right?
Bring them out.
Because Weber is hurt and Chara, Boston won't want him to play. They'll say take McAvoy and they'd probably be happy to do it. One last time. Yeah. One last. I'm on this now.
Again, we need 10 shots out of you. Go to San Jose and take 10 slap shots.
See, I always write down notes when I think of something. So I'm putting that in next week's blog. I want one last Chara versus Weber showdown in the All-Star. Bring them out there. Say, guys, you get an all-expenses-paid trip to San Jose.
Bring your family.
You can leave on Saturday. Do it on Friday. Yeah. You can leave on Saturday. Or here's a trip to a winery. Or, Zdeno, here's a mountain. Go bike up it.
Here's a mountain.
Go bike up it.
We've brought Kilimanjaro to San Jose. Go.
Do it. One more time. Like, just let's go. One last time. Weber and Chara, one for the road.
We got to go down. Like,
and bring
all
in
all
Al Iafrady.
We got to go down officially and make the list and plug in the players.
I once asked Gartner if he would want to do it again. He says, are you crazy?
Oh,
I'm
dude,
like 50-something years old.
He can still go. You ever see him up at NTR?
No, NTR
is a training rink a little bit north of the city of Toronto in Newmarket. There's also one in Richmond Hill. But he still runs skates there. And Mike can still go. I play tons of charity games with Mike. And usually later on in the game, the juices start going. Oh yeah, he gets like I love the idea of the senior circuit for that skills competition
yeah.
too. Anyway,
we might be getting too carried away, but I do want to see Weber and Chara one more time.
Austin Matthews, shooting percentage.
Yeah, so here's the other one. So McDavid's got the time on ice, and he beat the Oates record of most goals for the start of the season you're involved in. So Matthews was shooting 50% entering Monday's game against the Kings, and he stunk that night. He was over 2, so he's down to 45.5. he's shooting at 45.5%, and, you know, one of the things I looked at
what's
was
the average, what's 14? The record?
Yeah, 14, okay. 15. So he shot 14 his first year, and he shot 18, I think, his second year. Or was it 10 and 14? It's in the blog. I can't remember off the top of my head. I think it was 14, 18. But anyway, so the record is Sergei Makarov. He shot 32.3%.
I saw that. I didn't know that that was that. I didn't know he did that.
Yes. And Simmer, Craig Simpson, our guy, he held the record at 31.6 until Makarov broke it. And
Simmer's career average, I think, was like 22, 23. He had a good one.
I think he's the highest percentage shooter ever.
Him, Curry,
yeah.
Lemieux.
I'm sure he knows. He'll tell us if we're wrong. But
Bossy, had me up there.
Yes. Oh, I love Bossy. But anyway, so Makarov's number one. But in this century, it's lower. The highest is Ribeiro, 25.2. Although Kerfoot and William Karlsson were both about 23.5 last year.
Yep.
So you're sitting there and you're looking at Matthews as a 45.5 to start the season, and you know you're not exactly going out on a limb to say that's not going to stay.
Yep.
But here's the difference in him and a lot of those other guys. Like, he's on pace for 270 shots.
Yeah.
Nobody who's at the top of the list shoots that much, with the exception Gretzky and Lemieux, I think, had years where they were both over 275, and they're in the top 25 ever of one season of shooting percentage. So I think the thing for Matthews that's hard is he's a great shooter, but he's a volume shooter. Mm-hmm. And the more you shoot, the harder it is to stay atop that list. But I'm looking forward to seeing if he can do it.
Alex Tanguay was always at the other end of that
He's
fascinating because
it's he's sixth.
He's lower volume, though.
Tanguay
was, I mean, he was so frustrating to watch as a player. Normally you see a player with a puck on a stick and you think, great shooting position, pass. Like, when I think of the history of the NHL and players who only shot when it was the perfect time to shoot,
mm-hmm.
Alex Tanguay comes to mind for me right away.
He's on that 21st century list. Like, he's fourth or sixth or something that. Yeah, he's got a season like that. I noticed his name.
Because his career, I remember looked it up once doing an Avs game, and I think his career shooting percentage was somewhere in the neighborhood of 17%.
Yeah.
Which I looked at and I said, wow. There's one of those shows where you're like, oh, the unheralded guys from Colorado who don't get, like, whether it's Milan Hayduk, because everyone focuses on Sakic and focuses on
Forsberg.
Hayduk is?
Yeah, he's another guy. As a matter of fact, he is one of only two players this century who have shot over 20% taking 200 shots in a year. He's one, and Brad Boyes was the other.
This may be dated by the time you hear this, mm-hmm. but I want to get it out there as well. What's happening with the Nylander camp?
So it was broken today. Lance Horn by the Toronto Sun had the big scoop today that Kyle Dubas went to Switzerland to meet with William Nylander. And from what I understand, this was not a negotiation as much as it was a conversation about where we are, what we're thinking. We're not trying to trade you. We want to keep you. We made a promise, and we think that you are an important part of our team. And I think he went to do that. I think mm-hmm. he went to go see him face-to-face and tell him how important it was. But I'm also sure, and I don't know this for sure, but it would not surprise me also that Dubas delivered the message that we can't go past a certain point here.
Hang on, can't go past a certain point in the season?
No,
or
in terms of the number.
The number, okay.
The number.
Because a certain point in the season is December 1st.
Yeah, everybody knows that. Yeah. But I think he probably told him, like, you know, Willie, we got to do something here at this number or lower. Now, I think they'll go back to the agent and they'll sort it out. But from what I understand, this wasn't a negotiation as much as an explanation on what they're thinking. And B, Nylander has been legitimately concerned that they would sign him and trade him. And I think they were trying to tell him that that's not what they're doing here.
Was this then this is our line in the sand?
There's more nuance to it than that. Yes, you can argue it's the line in the sand, but I think it's also as much as, Willie, we want you here. They do want him there. Like, they do value him as a player. And they want to tell him that they're not trying to trade him. But you're right. At the end of the day, Dubas probably said to Nylander, we can only go so far. Because now I'm looking at Matthews, and if it's an 8-year deal, it's got to be over 12.
Over 12 and under what?
I have this weird feeling that someone told me that there's like a 3-4 in this. So I'm like, is it 12.34? Like, I don't know.
Players. They just reserved that for the final four digits of their phone number.
Well, hey, Crosby.
Like, if you're a number 28 in the NHL, your last four digits are 28. I'm like, oh, geez, really?
9-6-7, 28-28. No, I don't know. Like, I think Matthew's number is only getting higher. So, like again, that's why I said this might be a 5-year deal. And I know people freaked out. Like, he doesn't want to sign for 8 years. I think he would sign for 8 years. I don't think that's a problem, but for now, it might be shorter, but right now is Matthews over 12 on 8 years? You know, he probably is.
I think it depends on the percentage of the cap. I think you look at what Sidney Crosby signed for percentage wise, and that was 17.6 of the cap. Like, everyone looks at the number and goes, well, hang on, Crosby's at 8.7. How can these other players be making more? No, you got to look at when the cap was at that time, and Crosby was 17.6. Connor McDavid, the original contract before he walked it down. Man, if Bob Goodenough was around. Before he walked it down, it was 17.6, down to 16.6, his choosing. I would imagine that Auston Matthews, same 17.6 or the 16.6?
Well, the one thing, a couple things are interesting about that. So I've mentioned that to GMs before, and they're like, these agents, they sucker you guys into promoting these lines, like about the percentage of the cap as opposed to the number.
Yeah, what do they look at? They don't look at percentage of cap?
And I told an agent, that goes, oh yeah, we love that one. So it was pretty funny. Like, the one GM was like, you guys just parrot these talking points. But yeah, I see that as being potentially legitimate. The one thing I really do believe is I just find it hard to believe the Maple Leafs have not investigated the nuclear option. Like, what happens if we get to an offer sheet and the cap is 83 next year and somebody offers them 16.6? Mm-hmm. I think they know exactly what they'd have to do in that situation.
They'll match.
But I think they have an idea of what their roster will look like. Like, I remember one GM a couple of years ago who told me, and he had a big player. He goes, I don't think there's going to be any offer sheets. Nobody does this. But just in case, he said, we have a big board in our office of what our team looks like with this one guy making 20%.
Okay, let's revisit the conversation we just had then. If you're William Nylander and you're concerned about being traded, would part of the conversation with Kyle Dubas be, well, what happens if Auston Matthews gets offer sheeted at $16 million and you need to scrub salary?
I believe they would tell him that that's not going to happen. Like, I think the Leafs and Matthews are going to make a deal. I do. I think it's going to get done. But, you know, at some point, you have to say to someone, I don't control everything. I control what I control, and I want to keep you here. Now, if that happens, things are going to be different. All you can say is, I'll make you a promise that I'll try to deal with you as fairly as possible. But my plan, and I do believe this is the plan, is to keep all those guys.
We're deep into the podcast. We haven't mentioned one of the headline stories of the week, and that is the Matheson suspension, the board slam on Elias Pettersson.
You know,
this divided hockey guys.
Yeah, it did. The one guy, he always... There's one GM. He's a really funny guy. Whenever something like this happens...
Ken Holland.
No, it's not Ken Holland. I like playing this game with you, though.
You just do it to me.
I do it to you all the time.
Julian Breeswell.
I love playing this.
All right. Rob Blake.
Whenever something like this happens, he sends me a one-word text.
Yep.
Canada.
Are you saying this is Tuesday, Columbus, Minnesota? We're not talking about it?
That's exactly what he's saying.
No.
He said it's...
Hang on. Canada, Saturday night.
Yeah, he just says Canada, but probably. There's no question about it. Like, you know, one of the most rabid fan bases in this country is Vancouver. And, yep. You know, hey, they love their Canucks, or they love talking about their Canucks. And, you know, one, I do like the fact that they drive our numbers. When that team is good, our numbers are really good because BC is passionate about the Canucks. But when I followed up, he said exactly what you said. If this wasn't a young star player in the Vancouver Canucks, this is not lunacy.
So then the Pandora's box has been opened because we see board slams all the time. All the time.
Well, you know, I thought the explanation was good.
Next time that it happens, hey, thanks for giving us a free intermission.
I thought the explanation of the suspension, I think it was really good. Like, you know, I showed in the blog Brad Malone on Sam Gagner.
Yep.
And Gagner was hurt when he played for Philly 3 years ago. And Nick, on Monday night's game, we did the regional between the Kings and the Leafs, and he showed William Carrier on Brooks Orpik, and Orpik got hurt. Gagner, by the way, missed a couple of months. But the one thing that they said was it wasn't all in one motion. If you watch Malone on Gagner, he hits him and takes him down. If you watch Orpik and Carrier, Carrier hits him and Orpik is hurt. This is a pin and a hit and then a lift and a throw down. And so if we're going to parse this, that's what we're going to be parsing. Now, I know there are people, they go bananas when the weight thing is brought up. They say it's not fair, you know, the weight shouldn't matter. I think it does matter because this play probably doesn't happen the way it happens if there isn't a difference between the two guys. But I think it just shows you, you know, how far we've come, Jeff, even in 5 years. Like in 5 years, they're not even looking at that. And now we're in a very different spot.
It's amazing where in the NHL, when you close one door, you open up another. And
you notice that all the time?
Who's that?
Colin Campbell.
Does he?
Yes.
He wasn't the person that texts you Canada.
No.
Okay.
Although
is it American,
he is,
US-based GM?
Yeah.
Because that does sound like Colin.
But Colin, he's bugged me about, remember when Anaheim played Edmonton in the playoffs? And,
of course.
And Kessler held the leg?
Yeah.
And like.
Yeah. Does it count?
He said, you went on during the intermission and Anaheim's going bananas. They're like, Hockey Night in Canada wants Edmonton to win. Listen to Friedman. And he said it on the air. He said it on Hockey Central. I was like, give me a break. Anyway, go ahead.
No, my only point is, I wonder if, because we see this more and more in the NHL, the hit against the boards and then the push down to the ice to eliminate the forward from the play.
Mm-hmm.
What can't you do as a defenseman anymore when you hit a player? Pin him against the boards. Once upon a time, you could hit a player and hold him, right? Like you got like one steamboat, two steamboats, and then you got to let him go, right? It's that catch release. But you could hold him for a while. You can't do that anymore. So I think the way that defensemen have figured out around that is not just to hit the player, but knock the player down.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the sense that within the Department of Player Safety, they were split.
I bet you they were torn.
And
I bet you
there
they were.
A lot of them, they're like, hold on a second here. This happens all the time. We don't want the bear hug into the boards and the pin. We don't want that. This is what defensemen do instead. They hit and they throw down. And it happens all the time. And now we're saying it's suspendable. Like, I do agree with you. Like, the way that they split hairs on it with the two distinct acts, one's a hockey play and one's not, and you want to suspend for the non-hockey play, I get that. But, man, that is such a fine line. I would imagine many in the Department of Player Safety that said, hold on a second here. I know it's tough because it's Vancouver and they're red hot
and
it's Saturday night and there's a concussion. It's a young star player. I get all that. It would be a really tough sit if we didn't do anything, but I have a hard time believing that there was consensus amongst the Department of Player Safety on this one.
Yeah.
A hard time.
That's fine. Like, I remember a few years ago when Rafi Torres hit Jared Stoll in the playoffs, you know, Rob Blake was so upset by that ruling, he basically got up and said, I'm not doing this anymore. I don't have a problem with people disagreeing. I don't at all. As a matter of fact, the art of disagreement and polite disagreement has really been lost all over society. I look at that play and I'm like, okay. And if you're a defenseman in the league right now, you have to understand that that's the way it's going to be played. And you're right. Now, every time we have an intermission and there's something like that, we're going to talk about it. But I know that people get upset when the weight thing comes up. I think it's a factor because if he was not as light a guy, it wouldn't have happened. Like on the very next shift, Gudbranson and Brower get into it and Gudbranson knocks down Brower and they're
both 215.
They're both listed the same. Like I get it. Like I thought the suspension video was very clear. I thought it was very well done. The one thing that stands out to me the most is there were people in the NHL who thought Sidney Crosby should have been protected when he got in. And there were a lot of people who felt, nope, you have to earn it. And this is right out of the lockout, and Crosby's going to be the star that lifts up the NHL after the lockout. And there were a lot of people, not just people in Pittsburgh, like, we have to give this guy more of a path. And there were people who fought back. They said, no, you have to earn it in the NHL. And I admire that. There's nothing wrong with making things hard on great players. Michael Jordan wasn't going to be as great as he was without the Detroit Pistons killing him year after year after year.
Right.
And part of me looks at this and wonders, okay, does this mean a change now? Does this mean that if you do this to a star player, it's going to be a problem? I don't know the answer. I guess it's we'll see. But that's a big change for the National
Hockey. If I'm the NHLPA and I hear protect star players, what I'm thinking to myself is protect all players. Right? Like what? So I understand that they're the ones that move the needle and they're the ones that fans come to see and they're the ones that are driving the game. There's 700 players in the union.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, they get a lot of heat in a suspension hearing. Who do you think they were defending? Were they defending Pettersson or were they defending Matheson?
Matheson.
Absolutely. And some people get upset by that.
Mm-hmm.
They get really upset by that. So why aren't you protecting the guy who didn't do anything wrong? Matheson's no headhunter. The guy's clean as clean gets. It was a bad play that went sideways. But you know where I would disagree with you, Jeff? What's the one thing that makes players crazy right now?
Escrow.
Yes. What's your best chance of beating escrow? Growing the game. If I was not a star player, but I was good enough to play in the league, yes. Do I want the Players Association looking out for my best interests? Absolutely. Do I want them to defend me if I need defending? Absolutely. But you know what else I want? How do we make the game make more money so that I don't have to pay as much escrow? And one of the ways you do that is you let the star players be the star players.
Do you think for a second...
What's the fastest growing league in the world right now?
NBA.
And why?
Because the stars are on the court tons.
And they're on the court tons, and they still, like...
It's a different
but,
game.
Yeah, I understand that, but don't tell me that LeBron James doesn't take his abuse, because he does. Like, Shaquille O'Neal, he used to get the crap kicked out of him every night. He was bigger than everyone else, so he got hit more. But the bottom line is, they created something where the stars could be the stars. If you really want this game to grow, I mean, you can only Connor McDavid can play 30 minutes a night, I guess.
Yeah.
But you have to let the stars be the stars.
But do you think for a second that, you know, Connor McDavid comes down Danny DeKeyser's side and he's thinking, you know what, I better stay away because of escrow?
No. But I think that there's something to the way the game is called, the way supplemental discipline is done. It's not on the ice. It's the second thought. The best thing that could have happened out of this for Vancouver was there's going to be guys saying, okay,
I'm going to get dinged if I hit him.
I'm going to get dinged if I hit this guy. That's the best thing that could have happened to the Canucks.
Department of Player Safety playing enforcer, George Parros doing his old job.
You look at 20 years, like for 20 years, how much did the Sedins get clobbered
tons.
Out there?
Tons. I remember those first couple of years, they were getting crushed every night.
So if I'm Vancouver, I'm looking at this right now. First of all, I want the kid healthy. Nobody wants to see the kid have a concussion or long-term concussion problems. But I'm looking at this right now, I'm saying, woo, like the Sedins got mugged for 20 years.
Yep.
Maybe this means this kid can't get mugged as much.
And that will wrap up the segment. When we come back, Riley Cote, ex-Philadelphia Flyer, ex-NHL tough guy, now taking care of everyone's health around sports. The GMC Sierra Denali sets a higher standard in a full-size pickup for purposeful technology and performance. Features like Apple CarPlay keeps you connected to what matters most, and an available 420 horsepower 6.2-liter engine gives you the power to take on any challenge. Lead the way like a pro with the GMC Sierra Denali. GMC, we are professional grade. Okay, Elliot, joining us now is the co-founder of Athletes for Care, also of the Hemp Heals Foundation, a wellness speaker, and I would imagine someone that is celebrating the news across Canada. Like a lot of other Canadians these days, he is Riley Cote, former NHLer, who joins us now. Riley, first of all, thanks for doing this. And second of all, your reaction to the news in Canada about the legalization of marijuana.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. No, I think it's great. I mean, I think it's been a long time coming. I think today actually marks the day that it actually is actually legal. But, you know, I think it's been a long time coming for Canadians. They've known it's been coming. And I think it's great for public health. I think there needs to be a huge educational component to it all, but it certainly, it opens up the door for society kind of culturally change. So I think it's a beautiful thing.
Let's just set the stage for why Riley is a great guest to have on this. So Riley, born in Winnipeg, played his junior hockey in Prince Albert. You played 156 NHL games. You were a tough guy, no question about that. Always in great shape, a definite challenge for anybody who tried to take you on physically. After playing, you went into coaching. You know, it's interesting. The Flyers is an organization. If you're a good Flyer, they take care of you. You coached in the American Hockey League for a few years. But I remember noticing during that time, Riley, on your Twitter, that there were a lot of links to cannabis products, a lot of talk about hemp and the health. This is something that you got into long time ago. And I just wanted to ask, what was the process? How did you discover this? And why did you say that this is something that I want to promote and discuss because I think it's important?
Yeah, you know, this goes back to, right around the time I retired, 2010, age of 28. The wheels started falling off the carriage physically. And then being a fighter and, the concussion stuff, the mental side of things and just the direction of the role at the time and my positioning with the team. A lot of things kind of came to, this abrupt end, I guess you'd call it. And I had to make a decision. Am I going to continue to be a meatball or am I going to, take this opportunity in coaching, get out of the game and change my life? It was an exit strategy for me. And I, kind of tackled my demons and realized the way I was living was unsustainable. And I always been into fitness and lifting weights and being hard and being competitive, but not very mindful, not even, from the diet standpoint, just kind of consuming calories and carbohydrates and that whole bit. So really, I got into hemp and cannabis, understanding the nutritional profile of the hemp seed, started transitioning from whey proteins or dairy-based proteins, animal proteins, to plant-based proteins, specifically hemp. Very digestible, high in omega-3 fatty acids and the whole bit. And then that kind of sparked my interest into, the other parts of the plant, the healing parts of the plant, the history of cannabis of all time, really being an essential component to all medicines. And then using cannabis and then tying in the science that I was learning on the non-psychoactive cannabinoids like CBD. I started, treating my concussions and the residual collateral damage from concussions with CBD oil. And I just kind of went on this path of enlightenment and just kind of an understanding of the natural world, specifically the cannabis plant, because it has so much value and so many healing properties that it was kind of like dusted under the rug. We have a heroin crisis on our hands, an opioid crisis, and it's because of the prohibition of cannabis. And I connected all these dots and became extremely passionate about it and kind of wanted to speak the truth. And that's where it all began.
It seems as though we're going to get in the specifics of the health benefits and, the wellness properties of all these things, Riley. But it seems as if, hearing you speak about it and looking at your biography and, knowing who you were as an NHLer and growing up and playing hockey, it seems very much like you are a all-in kind of guy. Like when I hear you talk about this, you are all in on this as, not just a piece of your lifestyle, but a large part of your lifestyle and part of a bigger profile of who you are right now. Just like when you played in the NHL, no one casually becomes a tough guy in the NHL. You have to really want to do it and there has to be a drive for it. Is that an accurate assessment of you that if I'm in for something on a penny, I'm in it for a pound as well? I'm a game seven guy no matter what the issue is.
100%. You said it. I mean, I'm all in. When I believe in something, and back in the day, I would have certainly loved to have scored 50 goals a year and earned those paychecks. But, skill level wasn't in the cards, so I had to do it the next best way. And that was, take my competitive nature to the next level and be aggressive and in your face and fight for something that I wanted so bad. So in this sense, this is like, fundamental human rights type of things, environmental health and economic health. I mean, if you want to break down the whole cannabis plan and mm-hmm. how it can help public health, but also the farmers and all these different layers of how it can help and heal. It just makes a whole lot of sense for me to be all in. And I've learned that I was living very unsustainably. And I learned that if you work with the laws of nature and follow the natural world, then these things that were here from the start of time that supported mankind, that you have a better chance of, being in the best shape you can be, being healthy. The big thing is mental health, having good mental health. And staying out of the medical system and staying healthy and, looking at cannabis and using these products as wellness or preventative type of products versus so reactive when we're sick or deeply ill that we're leaning on cannabis now. I think there's this whole other conversation of how to respectfully use cannabis to basically mitigate the daily grind of life.
Riley, tell us, as you mentioned, North America has an opioid problem. And the tough contact sports, hockey, football, boxing, wrestling, MMA, they have a painkiller problem. C- Can you tell us specifically how the path you've gone down has helped your health?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really noticed a huge difference when I retired. It was not so much what I added, it was what I removed. And even though I had been a cannabis consumer for my junior hockey career and pro hockey career, when I turned pro, I was introduced to this, you know, this pharmaceutical world of managing, you know, everything from sleep to muscle, swelling, inflammation, pain, the whole bit. And I didn't really understand the difference. One was legal, one wasn't. Again, I was a very mindless back. I wasn't really until I retired and then started removing some of these things that were destructive to my mental health and all this stuff that I really started realizing how beneficial it was and how medicinal and therapeutic it really was. And these other things were kind of fogging my philosophies, but like my belief system on what medicine really was. So when I started realizing all these things, it was easy for me to go back to cannabis and make sense of it, because we've kind of been fundamentally misled. I mean, there's drugs in the pharmaceutical markets like Marinol, which is synthetic THC, and you kind of connect these dots and do the math on, you know, patents and realizing that the U.S. government holds a patent on, you know, cannabinoids as neuroprotectants and antioxidants. So they know something that we don't as far as, you know, brain health and human health. So, you know, connecting all these things and understanding the history and the prohibition of cannabis and realizing that cannabis is illegal not because it's bad for us, it's because it's that positive and that good of a resource, is that just makes a whole lot of sense for me. So for me to be fully into it, fully be an advocate and get the word out there, I mean, it's what needs to happen.
What are the issues around cannabis is the age at which someone should start? And I say this hypocritically, knowing that I started smoking weed when I was in high school, probably retrospectively, probably not the best thing for my brain. I know that one day, like many people, look forward to having a beer with their son when they grow up. I look forward to having a joint with my kid when he gets old enough. I just don't know what that date is, Riley. Your thoughts on junior hockey players using cannabis, using marijuana, as, you know, anxiety aids, sleep aids, whatever, you know, at that young an age, you know, to be honest, when their brains aren't fully formed yet?
Yeah. You know, I think that's a really tough question. You know, I look back on my life as well. I mean, I started consuming cannabis at 15, but I also started drinking at 15. I moved away from the junior hockey and started kind of getting wrapped up in the culture of hockey, which is, you know, beers with the boys, beers. Yeah. And you look at what that does on the brain. I mean, clearly alcohol is destructive to the brain. I think it's been proven over time that it's not positive for the brain. And if you want to compare that to cannabis, where it has the opposite effect, it's actually a neuroprotectant, promotes neurogenesis. So I think you look at children with epilepsy, you know, we're going from, you know, 80 seizures a day to zero. I mean, it's obviously having a positive impact on the brain. And you, you know, you go into children with autism, it's having a positive impact on the brain. And you go all the way to people in the geriatrics community, you know, people with Alzheimer's and dementia, having a positive impact on the brain. So somewhere in the middle, we have to be honest with this conversation of what it's actually doing to the brain compared to other substances like alcohol, opioid. And if you want to be 100% honest, refined sugar. I mean, there's studies out there that are showing that refined sugar, white sugar, sparks the brain 8 times more than cocaine. There's a reason why we are obese and overweight and sick in the West specifically, is we overconsume refined carbohydrates. And I mean, that's the definition of a Schedule I drug. I mean, it's highly addictive and it has no medical value at all. I mean, so, you know, we have to be honest with substance and what it does for the brain and for public health. And, you know, cannabis is easy to demonize because it's been illegal for so long. And, you know, we always see those commercials of like frying a couple eggs and this is your brain on drugs. Well, yeah, that's ingrained in people's heads. They have a hard time wrapping their head around that this could actually be positive for brain health. So we just have to be honest with these conversations. Honestly, junior hockey, absolutely. I mean, think about the guys get fed in junior hockey. I mean, even in high school, it's just like the pill culture is ingrained into the culture of junior high and high school and going into college. I mean, that's already happening. So to me, a natural herb, responsibly, mindfully, if it's actually, you know, taught the right way, you know, could change culture and maybe avoid some of these addiction issues and mental health issues down the road with these people that abuse very unsustainable toxic substances.
Let me just put down my chocolate bar then and continue with my next answer. You know, Riley, one of the things that when I told someone we were going to be talking today, he said, you would not believe how many people have probably reached out to Riley quietly in the NHL.
I believe that.
Including star players. And I'm not asking you to name any names, but I'm asking you, what percentage of players would you say either use marijuana in the NHL already or have reached out to you to ask you, Riley, what do you know? Educate me.
I always say the number 50% of guys are consuming cannabis-based products. I would say it's higher, more up into like 70, 75% now with all the science and the CBD products that are available, the delivery method, transdermal patch, the tinctures, the capsules, the creams, the topicals without, you know, the psychoactive component. I think the guys figure out the psychoactive, like the recreational dry herb themselves. I think what they're interested in is like the CBD, this the stuff I'm talking about, the non-psychoactive products. I have a brand I launched here in the U.S. A few other athletes have kind of done the same thing. Our slogan, Rethink Recovery, and it's really promoting cannabis-based products, specifically hemp-derived CBD products, as anti-inflammatories, help with anxiety, stress, sleep, protect the brain. So, yeah, I mean, I've had a ton of guys, current and retired, and alumni guys, Flyers alumni guys specifically. I mean, I put myself out there 2 years ago before I lost my job to the Flyers alumni with Lindy Snyder, the daughter of Ed Snyder, presented Cannabis 101. You know, here are the facts. Here are the facts. Here's the, you know, state law in Pennsylvania. Here's the state law in New Jersey. You know, how to get a medical card. Here's some samples of CBD, hemp-derived CBD products. Gave them all samples. Like, it's amazing. And then they try them, and it speaks for themselves. It's not about a brand. It's just about a product and a high-quality product. And I can't even tell you. I should write a book, like right now, on how many different stories I'm getting just from all the way across, from guys that had lifelong diabetes to lowering insulin levels to just basic arthritis, anxiety, sleep, you name it, it's helped with people. And that's why it's not me, it's the product itself. People are interested, they're curious, they want to learn, they want to try it, because it's all about self-preservation. And we need to take ownership of our own health, and that's why people are seeking these alternatives, because I think they've lost faith in the medical establishment with this type of thing. You know, no one wants opioids anymore. No one wants to go down that path. We don't want sleeping pills. We don't want all that. We know we want something that's real, and that's what it is, and that's why they're seeking it.
Has the league or the Players Association ever called you to either ask questions or ask what you're doing?
I've been in talks with Glenn Healy from the NHL Alumni Association, and it's been probably close to 2 years now, and they're actually on the verge of closing a deal to study cannabis. I think inflammation and pain, but also cannabis and the brain within the alumni. So it's happening. Mm. What current players are allowed to use it, or it's endorsed by, you know, the medical staff or the league, because I think the international game is complicated over the border with the laws in the U.S. So right. I don't think until the U.S. government changes the stance that the NHL policy on cannabis is going to change. But at least for the retired players that are in Canada, we should be doing studies on this. We should be getting guys cannabis to help with their pain and inflammation and brain issues and the whole bit. I mean, I met Steve Ludzik at this original Six alumni event that we presented to. And this guy has been managing Parkinson's for 15 years. And only in the last 2 years has he leaned on cannabis, and it's been a game changer for him. He's so conservative, and he has a hard time speaking publicly about it, and he did that day. He did a story on CBC.
I wrote a thing about Parkinson's. Everybody asked me about Parkinson's disease, how it affects me, and I'll tell you how I think. I talked with Parkinson's. I try to ignore you, but you're a bully. You would not go away. I ran from you. I hid from you, hoping you would leave me alone. But someone should have told you. Somebody should have let you know. Somebody should have warned you before you started with me 14 years ago. You picked the wrong guy. You dialed the wrong number. You called the wrong guy outside. Now I am the hunter, not the hunted. I am the hammer, not the nail. That's the way I treat Parkinson's disease.
But, you know, it takes guys a lot to get out of the comfort zone, because it goes against most people's way of thinking. I mean, I grew up very conservative. I mean, I was just like anybody else. I mean, you know, Reefer Madness. I mean, but it... At some point, you got to challenge the system a little bit. You know what I mean? You can't accept the status quo, especially when you have, we talked about an opioid and heroin crisis and just an overall public health crisis. Like, we're sick. We're almost doomed. You know, the medicine is messed up. It's all business. There's no compassion. It's not about what's good for the people. And we know cannabis is that. And that's my opinion overall on that.
Riley, a couple of more questions, then we'll let you get on with your day. First, you referenced, you know, the culture of hockey and things need to change. The mindsets need to change. How close do you think we are, based on your conversations with people in the NHL, from someone like a significant, like star level player, to talking about how this has helped his life and benefited his life in a positive way? How close are we to having that Pied Piper in the NHL?
I think we're under a year away. I mean, you know, Connor McDavid's already made a pretty powerful comment in the paper the other day about, you know, the NHL is not stupid not to. Now that it's fully legal on recreational and medical, there's nothing holding them back if they want to say their opinion, especially on the Canadian side of the border. So, I mean, I think as this thing grows and maybe advertisement laws change, you're going to see probably, you know, endorsement deals through cannabis or CBD companies or hemp companies with players, and you're going to see a lot more stories coming out. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. we haven't even scratched the surface. And I would think that's going to happen sooner or later.
Okay.
We're going to see how quickly this evolves into, you know, the wellness and recovery side of things.
Don't disagree at all. Last question, and we thank you for your time today, Riley. What's the worst thing about cannabis? Not the best thing. We know, and we've, you know, I think we're at a point now in our society after having, you know, honest conversations about it, what the benefits are, whether it's anxiety or sleep or, you know, pain relief. What's the worst thing about it from your point of view?
The worst thing about it, probably the laws still that exist in the U.S., but outside of that, I mean...
The bad edible experience? Come on, Riley. We've all been there, guy.
I actually have. I was actually going there with that. Yeah, I did. And it's really the worst thing with cannabis is for the mindless consumer to just think all cannabis is equal and miss and disrespect it. I think cannabis is a substance that needs to be respected. So, I mean, I've had two bad early experiences with edibles. I didn't consume an edible for 13 years, really up until I retired when I started, you know, microdosing and having a respect for substance and taking less and less is more type of approach. But I think people that get introduced to cannabis and overconsume, especially with edibles, it's a bad experience. And those people are turned off for a long time. So that you have to be very, very cautious, especially with edibles. No question.
Excellent words. Riley, thanks so much for your time. And I have a feeling we'll be talking plenty over the next couple of years as this story evolves. Thanks so much for this, Riley.
No problem. Anytime. You have a good day.
Hockey season is back with Tim Hortons NHL trading cards. Just $1 with the purchase of any beverage. Plus, play online at collecttowin.ca for a chance to meet Sidney Crosby. Plus taxes at participating Tim Hortons restaurants for a limited time.
You know, Riley, I got to ask you too. Have you done more interviews in the past week than you did the entire rest of your career?
Yeah, absolutely. You're not kidding. It's interesting.
It's all good, though. It's all good.
I'm going to make certainly a better career in life out of this side of things than the hockey player.
A lot healthier. A lot healthier, that's for sure.
No doubt.
All right, Elliot, finish up with some Ask 31s. Here's a good one. We'll start with this one. This from Roger. Why didn't Elliot keep the beard?
Scott Moore wouldn't let me.
The gentleman we were praising earlier on?
No,
hang on.
It's gone. I'm going to grow it back.
They're coming back.
Maybe I should. I should ask if I can do it now. Yeah, I knew that wasn't going to be allowed to go on TV. I would love to wear that on TV, though. We'll see. Maybe now.
Stand by. From Kawhi Leonard's tour guide.
I like that.
That's a nice Twitter handle. Why are GMs so afraid of using offer sheets?
I think there's a couple of reasons. Number one, I think that they just feel that generally they don't go anywhere. All they do is inflate. Everybody always matches. So you feel you've inflated a star's number. And for what? You haven't done yourself anything.
But the same amount of money is in the system for everybody.
Well,
so it's like
some people don't understand that.
Everyone has the same salary cap.
Some people don't understand that. But still, as we've seen, they've been used punitively. Remember, Mike Gillis did it to St. Louis on David Backes.
Yes.
And then what did St. Louis do? They offered sheeted
Steve Bernier
to get back at them. So you always worry about somebody coming back at you. There's no question there is intense pressure not to use them. I think the league frowns on them. And, you know, as one guy said to me once, you don't necessarily want to be on the bad side of that if you can avoid it. I do think we are getting closer to the day where they're going to – I said that for a couple of years now. Eventually, it's like people who think the housing bubble is going to burst in Toronto. You keep predicting it. Eventually, you're going to be right. But I have been predicting for years now that they are going to happen because fewer and fewer good players are hitting the market. And sooner or later, this is going to occur. And I believe that is going to be the case. But I understand the pressures that they don't get done.
There is a sense – true or false, there is a sense out there that general managers are shy about using offer sheets because it could affect them when it comes to future employment. I can't apply for a job there because once upon a time I stole one of their players.
You know,
you buy that?
I've never heard that before. You know, if somebody told you that, then obviously somebody feels that way. I've never heard that before. You know, for a long time, I know there was one general manager who felt he got kind of blackballed because he spent a lot of money, not offer sheets, but he spent a lot of money. And whether or not that's true, he felt that way. I've never heard that, Jeff, but if somebody's telling you that, then somebody feels that way.
From Ryan Quirk. I love this. Should NHL players have goal songs? Each player picks out their song when they score a goal.
I love that. I think that is great.
I love that idea. Baseball has it for walk-up music. Yeah. Why not goal songs for everybody?
Yeah, I think that's a great. And then we can have, like, remember when the Mets signed Billy Wagner, and he always came out with Enter Sandman, and he went to New York, and the first time he came out of the bullpen, he did Enter Sandman. New York went bonkers because it was like, wait a sec, that's Mariano Rivera's song.
Right.
You can't come to New York, and so you could have a situation where a guy gets...
He's got the same song.
Yeah, and no, Connor, you can't have that.
Yeah,
that's,
sorry, bud.
That's his song.
Ah, you
and
do
Connor
McDavid numbers.
Goes, I'm Connor McDavid. I'll take whatever song I want.
All of a sudden, someone gets a new watch. Yes. Someone's got a new car in the driveway just because of a goal song.
When Carlos Delgado was with the Blue Jays, Roger Clemens came for 21, and he got a Rolex out of it.
Not bad. A guy named Rick submits, who's the best interview you've ever had, and how thorough is media training with rookies these days?
It's pretty thorough. They're really prepared. There's no question about it. It's not only the teams and the leagues that do it. It's
their agents are
having guys do it. So yeah. I think it's really thorough. I've been asked this question a lot. I don't really have a great answer because I've been fortunate enough to interview a lot of people that were really good. I would say two of my my favorite hockey player to deal with ever was Daniel Alfredson. Mm-hmm. I love dealing with Alfredson, but probably like the guy I had the most fun interviewing, and I got to do it at a time where he was at the very peak of his career, was Usain Bolt.
What did you like about it?
Just fun. Like he was good. Like I've told this story before, but
this 208 Beijing?
Yeah, 208 Beijing, and he was so gracious. Like, you know, everybody wanted a piece of him, and he would come through in the mornings after the heats, and he would do NBC, he would do the Olympic Broadcasting Channel, and eventually do Jamaican TV. And the way it works is you're in a tower, right?
Yeah.
And every level has about 10 or 12 little pens where each country is in. And we were probably, I think we were 21 or 22 on the list that year. And he would walk there up in the morning and says, I'll get you guys all. He'd do NBC, he'd do IOC, he'd do Jamaican TV, and he'd say to the rest of us, I'll get you all after the final. And then after the final, he'd win, and he'd do everybody.
Awesome.
And we were all asking him the same questions, and not only did he do everybody, he was good. Like there was a world of broadcasters and people watching those broadcasts, like all of those countries, who walked away saying, what an awesome guy this guy is. And it wasn't anything I did. It was all him. Plus, Donovan Bailey was with us, and they were friendly, sure. So that helped. But he was so good, like one of the most impressive guys ever.
He humiliated me in Beijing. It's one of my favorite stories to tell.
What did he do?
So I had finished. I can't remember what I was doing. Archery that day, maybe table tennis. I can't remember. So I was wrapped up around noon. I wanted to go see Phelps swim at the Cube. So I went and filed at the IBC, and I'm all done. Ha-cha-cha, I got a few hours. I'm going to go see Michael Phelps swim. So I leave the IBC, and I'm walking. And I got my little CBC knapsack, and I'm clumping along, walking over to the Cube. And there's this, like, giant man beside me who just starts walking. But it's not walking. It's like a prance. Like, every single muscle in his body is in complete syncopation with all the other muscles. And I've never seen anyone move like that just walking. And I remember stopping, partially because I was embarrassed to be walking next to this gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
I looked over to my left, and it was Usain Bolt. And I remember stopping thinking, I'm embarrassed as a human being to walk next to him because he was so graceful.
Yeah.
Like, just the way that he moved, humiliated. I remember stopping and saying, I can't walk around him because I'm embarrassed.
Oh, my God.
So
yeah.
I stopped.
I
could, like,
I kind of get where you're
thump,
coming
thump,
from.
Thump. Like, what, just to have that ease of movement with your body is something I've always wanted in my whole life. And to see it, I was embarrassed. And
that's a great way,
like,
of putting it.
It's like, how can I call myself a human being?
I'm not worthy.
It's
funny, you know, in Detroit, they always talked about Lidstrom being like the perfect human. He'd put on his socks, and they'd be like, oh, my God, even his socks are flawless. It's a good way you mentioned it, like the fluidity of motion in his body. Because I remember noticing that, like just watching him walk from interview to interview.
It's amazing.
And everything works properly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything goes right.
It was like there was a shadow.
I'm glad I'm not the
I
only
turned.
Person that I've noticed this.
Oh, no.
You're totally right about that.
It took me a long time to get to the cube to see Phelps. I had to reassess my entire life, every movement pattern. Okay, Bang Bang Bart submits, what can be done to limit the extent to which coaching makes the game less exciting? Have any credible proposals ever been tabled?
It's hard because there's so much video now. You see what's coming. But, you know, I wrote in the notes this week, if you look at the NFL, they have made it borderline impossible to play defense. Between, you know, when I was born in 1970, for a long time, it was right around the time I was born that offensive linemen were really allowed to use their hands for the first time. If you're old enough to remember, defensive backs could maul receivers. Like, you couldn't get off the line. Those guys would tie you up. They'd throw you down. Yeah. They'd do whatever. You just look at the way they've turned into a passing league. Now, like hockey with the concussion issues, they changed the way you can lead with your helmet and you can hit.
Mm-hmm.
College football now is a targeting rule that's getting got kids thrown out of games for hits that would have been allowed years ago. The NFL has made it harder to play defense. And if you watch the NFL, and I do, this year has been spectacular. The quality of games in the most case and the offense, the skill players have really taken over.
In the
more.
Limited amount that I've watched this year, to me what stands out are comebacks.
Yes. And like if you watch like you in this week, Rodgers on Monday night and then that great New England Kansas City game on Sunday night. But what the NHL has done is, okay, so they've really battled down on obstruction. They've really now taken away the slashing. That's their move. For the person who asked the question, that's the counter move. Now, scoring is always up in October, and then it goes down. So we'll see. But I think what they're really hoping is the more you allow skill to take over, the harder it is for coaches to stop it. And I think that's what they're trying. Like someone pointed out to me, and it's in the notes this week, if you look at the last 11 seconds of San Jose, New Jersey on Sunday, New Jersey's up a goal, and they throw the puck out to center with 11 seconds left. Jeff, when I played as a kid, if you threw the puck out to center with 11 seconds left, it was over.
Yeah.
You weren't getting the puck, getting everybody back on side and getting a chance. San Jose got two chances. One of them, a really good one from Carlson. Kincaid had to make a hell of a save.
Regroups are faster than ever.
Like, that's the counter. Now, I don't know if we'll ever beat the coaches, but that is the counter move.
Could just take them off the bench.
You know, at a GM meeting a couple of years ago, there was an argument that there's too many coaches on the bench.
Like, you know, blame Fred Shiro. He brought Mike Nikolic aboard, and that was the first one, and that started the slippery slope. But could that ever go anywhere? You have as many coaches as you want in practice, but you're just having one person behind the bench during the game.
I know it came up. I don't know if it went anywhere, but I know it came up.
All right, so on that we'll conclude. I want to thank Riley Cote for stopping by the podcast. I want to thank our producer, Emil Delich. Want to put a final thought on this one for the week? A big, big week in Canada, Elliot, with the legalization of marijuana.
You know, it's funny. Like, we have a text group of buddies, and one guy said, okay, who's going to be the first guy to try? And we all named one guy. Nobody lost.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I want to remind everyone, next week we're in Winnipeg for the Jets and the Maple Leafs, so our podcast will be slightly delayed by probably one day, maybe two. We'll see if we get there. But
looking forward to that.
It'll be post-Winnipeg. I haven't been to Winnipeg since they announced that they got the team.
What?
That's how long it's been. It's true.
You should be fired for that.
I know. Shh, don't tell my boss. Who's my boss now? Scott's gone. Who is our boss now, Elliot? And thanks to Scott Moore, again, as you mentioned off the top. Great work, and hope that we meet again somewhere down the road. We will in a personal capacity, and we certainly hope so in a professional capacity as well. Thanks for joining us here on 31 Thoughts. We'll take it out with a song by the name of, you'll love this, Elliot, 31, Mike Edel. A number of dates, Rochester, New York, Washington, in Canada, Toronto, Ottawa, Hamilton, London, Waterloo. All those tour dates available at MikeEdel.com. Thanks for joining us this week.
Well, I'm scared that we left this old city for good. The digital nomad alone in the woods.